From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Another attack by the U.S. on Latin American solidarity, with the announcement last month of the creation of PROSUR, whose members thus far include all of the pro-U.S. governments on the continent. Thus far, Guyana, Argentina, Brazil, Chile, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, and Paraguay have announced that they join the new group, which appears to be directly targeting the Union of South American Nations, or UNASUR. This past week, the Foreign Affairs Minister of Chile announced that his country was leaving UNASUR. Aside from Chile, Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, Ecuador, and Paraguay have also started the process of leaving UNASUR. For more on that, we spoke with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, from Managua, Nicaragua, via Skype, Monday. So I guess I'd really like to probe this thing with PROSUR and what appears to be an attempt by the U.S. to, formalize bloc politics with the aim of becoming ultimate hegemon. Replaying the Cold War, I guess, on a hemispheric basis. Along those same lines, you're seeing an attempted mass exodus or group exodus, bloc exodus, from UNASUR, which before covered the entire South American continent.
UNASUR was founded in 2011, and all the South American countries signed the foundation statute for UNASUR. And by no means all the Latin American countries have signed for the formation of PROSUR.
For sure.
And so there's that aspect that affects the workings of PROSUR and continental perceptions of PROSUR. And I think you're right to say that it's very much a pro-US ideological initiative rather than the natural development of an integration initiative based on perceived interests of the countries that are signing up for it. And that was very much the case with UNASUR. When UNASUR was founded back in 2011, all the governments in the region, whatever their ideological complexion, agreed that they'd do better organizing as a bloc to defend their interests. And what PROSUR is essentially saying is that we have to be much more ideological, and we have to promote a strongly right-wing, neoliberal, pro-free market, agenda. And that is very much a development of the Pacific Alliance that we've talked about in previous conversations, which was essentially Chile, Colombia, Peru, and Mexico. But what PROSUR is doing is trying to develop the Pacific Alliance to incorporate, for example, Brazil, for example, Paraguay, for example, Argentina. So what they're trying to do is extend the ideological, the trade and economic policy ideology of the Pacific Alliance to the rest of the region. Now, will they be successful? It's unlikely that they'll be entirely successful, because, for example, countries like Uruguay, Bolivia, obviously Venezuela, are not going to participate. It's not clear what Guyana is going to do. So in terms of its legitimacy as a continental expression of a right-wing integration initiative based on neoliberal thinking and thinking very much subordinated to the policy needs of the United States. Just on that basis, PROSUR is a very problematic organization.
Yeah.
But there are two other aspects, and you probably have a better take than I do on the global geopolitical aspect in terms of, the relationship between the United States and its its global competitors, China and the Russian Federation, and how Latin America fits into that. And you may well have a better take on that than I do. But the other thing that I we should certainly emphasize about Prosur is that whereas it's very clear that Colombia and with Iván Duque, the right-wing president there, Jair Bolsonaro, the right-wing president in Brazil, Sebastián Piñera, the right-wing president in Chile, of course, and of course Mauricio Macri in Argentina, they're all going to strongly promote Prosur, but they've lost Mexico, for example.
Right.
And it's not clear at all that Andrés Manuel López Obrador, the current president of Mexico, a relatively progressive figure, it's not clear at all that he's going to promote Prosur and facilitate the demise of UNASUR, which is what the leaders of Prosur want.
Right.
Nor is it clear, and obviously Bolivia and Uruguay are two countries that are looking very much askance, in a very questioning way at the relevance and legitimacy of Prosur. And of course, Venezuela's not going to have anything to do with it. So then the other thing associated with that is, sustainable is the leadership of Prosur. Because as you and I were commenting before we started recording this conversation, people like Mauricio Macri, his political party are very unlikely to win the elections at the end of the year in Argentina.
Right.
So what will a relatively progressive government in Argentina make of Prosur? Jair Bolsonaro's current standing in Brazil is far from secure.
Right. And one foot on a banana peel, the other on a oil slick or whatever.
Right. And Sebastián Piñera, he has a relatively stable authority for his right-wing government there. But his right-wing government there only got into power because the relatively progressive forces in Chile, the social democrat politicians and the socialist politicians, couldn't form a united front.
Right.
They couldn't agree to unite against Sebastián Piñera.
Right.
And so, although his government is relatively stable, and the support for his policies in Chile and support for Prosur is very problematic. And then if you look at somebody like Lenin Moreno, who is likely to want to bring Ecuador into Prosur if he hasn't done already, something we should check. His situation is even more precarious than that of somebody like Jair Bolsonaro. Iván Duque in Colombia is himself having difficulty, although his government is relatively stable in terms of being able to implement policy. It's not clear at all that he's going to be very successful for the rest of the term of his administration. So with that kind of mix of legitimacy and instability or relative lack of legitimacy and relative lack of instability, that's not a great start for Prosur.
Agreed. Apparently the membership includes, these are the people that the nations that have signed on already, Argentina, Brazil, Chile, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, Paraguay. So it appears Lenny has signed on also. Now, there's some things that, just in terms at the strategic level, that sort of are betrayed by this effort. UNASUR, in essence, is a South American organization. It's our entire continent, regardless of the ideological bend, economic or political systems, whatever, has a place to meet and discuss things of common interest. In other words, it's a place where South America can meet among its various members and take actions to promote itself, to help develop itself, and to defend itself, against the outside world. And history shows that there's certainly a need for that. So you have this ideological break that's, you know, at least being made apparent. What it actually is, I won't go to the essence of it here, but you know, there's this binary that, you know, that's appeared politically, and it's telling that this group, as they form ProSOR, are leaving Unisor rather than saying, okay, well, this is the group. Unisor is a group where everybody can meet. All us guys that have the same ideological bent, we're going to meet over here, and then after we have our meeting, we're coming to the Unisor meeting as a block. I don't understand why they wouldn't do that. That rather than forcing, we're walking out of Unisor as we set this up, unless it's because somebody who's dictating policy finds the existence of an organization where South American nations can meet by themselves and make decisions about themselves together, just something that's not tolerable. And the only party, the obvious party, would be the one that has that Monroe Doctrine thing.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's obvious.
As we were talking about before we started recording the conversation, and Ricardo Patino, the former foreign minister for the government of Rafael Correa in Ecuador, he's now being persecuted by Lenin Moreno's judicial buddies that he's encouraging to go after just about every leading figure in Rafael Correa's last administration. And Ricardo Patino didn't mince his words in recent statements. He said that Lenny Moreno is a creature of the CIA, and you can't put it more plainly than that. And so, what you're just saying about ProSOR and asking the question, well, why do they have to leave UNISOR? And I think your answer is absolutely right. And the United States is dictating policy, And we talked a little about the internal difficulties within South America of this new ProSOR bloc, but perhaps we should look at the geopolitical stuff as well, because what ProSOR essentially is a development of the Pacific Alliance's determination to promote a right-wing trade and economic policies, but take that Pacific Alliance model and develop it across the whole of South America. But what the leaders and the instigators of this whole ProSOR idea are forgetting is that whereas the United States may be happy to follow the United States in being extremely spiteful towards UNISOR, what they don't seem to understand, these leaders, is that U.S. influence is going to extend into their talks with China, and that whereas the Pacific Alliance was able to negotiate with China. Argentina has Mauricio Macri made a state visit to China. And so all these countries that are trying to develop their economies on the basis of right-wing policies, whether they do it with right-wing policies or left-wing policies, the main game in town in South America now is China in terms of investment, in terms of infrastructure investment, in terms of volumes of trade. And China took over as Brazil's main trading partner a couple of years ago, pushing the US into second place. Now, what these ideologically driven right-wing leaders are doing, the Sebastian Pinheiro, Ivan Duque from Colombia, Jair Bolsonaro and Mauricio Macri, and this guy, I've forgotten the name of the guy in Peru, they're all quite forgettable, but what they seem to be forgetting is that China is their great hope to make a success of neoliberal economic policies that have failed on just about every other count. But do they really believe that the United States is going to let them develop that relationship with China? And the acid test, you and I agree, is whether Brazil will be allowed by the United States to go ahead with the agreement that they had under the previous usurper president, Michel Temer, to go ahead with the transcontinental railway from the port of Ilo in Peru, travel through Bolivia and then right across the southern part of Brazil to a port on Brazil's southern Atlantic coast. And will the United States let that project happen? I don't think they will. So what will that do to all these fantastic claims that these right-wing leaders are making for the economic possibilities of Prosur?
You know, if you want to ponder that stuff, by the way, it's an interesting time to do it. You know, as we've discussed before, right now the big talks are going on between the U.S. and China. You know, some people are portraying it as the world being divided up. I've used myself the reference to the Pope dividing the new world between the Portuguese and the Spanish back in the old days. And, you know, but certainly there is some kind of global, you know, in a metaphoric sense, conversation going on about all of these different, you know, points of contact. You have, certainly the possibility of some kind of quid pro quo over Korea and Latin America between China and the United States. You know, I think about the image that Orwell, for all his faults, many faults, painted with the three sheaves imagery over the three poles or the three powers that would exist in 1984. And that perhaps we're seeing something along those lines shaping out now for the next period. And if that's the case, having big conversations by self-aware actors in that might involve the U.S. having input into what China's role is in the Western Hemisphere. Not the best of things, because you're talking about imperialism manifest, but certainly better at a conference table than, you know, on the high seas or, you know, through some sort of military action. But it's possible. Right. I'm wondering, this may all be factoring into, you know, the relationship that people contemplate of, you know, China had announced all those big projects, the canal, the deep water ports, the transcontinental railroad, and all of that. And they've been moving forward in one fashion or another on just about all of it. And and so, you know, there's a point in time when people don't spend money on spec anymore when it's in the billions and billions of dollars, but rather, you know, on enforceable contracts and, you know, reliable outcomes. And so, the U.S. is the only real foil to China, right? There's really no other, you know, other than market forces that could be a foil to China. So I assume those talks are covering some of this stuff.
Yeah, and the thing is everything's out of phase, because the United States and China are having these kind of very, very high level discussions way over the heads of their regional allies, right? But China has made it very clear, for example, both China and the Russian Federation have made very clear that they are not letting the United States have their own way in Venezuela.
Right.
So that is a given, and that's not going to change. It's very unlikely to change. What might change is the Chinese will say, okay, so maybe over the next 5 years, we won't worry about building the transcontinental railway, and we won't bother the United States by proposing to go ahead with the interoceanic canal in Nicaragua.
Right.
But they're playing a long game. And they know that the internal contradictions in within all these South American countries, in particular Argentina, Brazil, all these right-wing countries, all they need to do is sit on their hands and wait for those neoliberal policies
to collapse
to collapse.
We'll be back there again. You know, not only that, because here's the thing that's specific to this situation. At a moment when this big game is going on over the heads of the regional players, why would regional players suggest breaking up their bloc so that they speak with multiple voices?
Well, and obviously because, and as you, that there lies the hand of the United States,
right,
as you rightly said.
Right.
So, but that, you know, that in itself, and shows that, well, and I think that's an indication of what we were talking about last week. Does the United States have a foreign policy in Latin America? And the answer is no, they don't. And they operate on kind of spiteful reflexes, or, you know, the kind of atavistic feelings that they have to be the dominant power. But not only do they have to be the dominant power, everybody has to see that they're the dominant power.
Right.
You know, and there's this kind of, there is no sane, rational United States foreign policy anywhere in the world. And Latin America is a good example of that. Because if the United States had a sane, rational foreign policy, they'd say, right, well, we can go with this. We can go with the flow, maintain our influence, let our right-wing government partners build up their relationship with China so that they have stronger economic policies to convince the domestic electorate that right-wing policies work. And that's the kind of approach that they'd be taking if they had any sense. They'd go with the flow, not kind of kick against every prick, you know, to mix metaphors, you know.
Yeah. No,
I think that what Prosur is, and above everything and before anything else, Prosur embodies all those contradictions, and it's a sign that the United States itself does not have a coherent foreign policy in Latin America, and it's actually not going to be able to resist the irresistible logic, the unprecedented historical force of China, the expression of a Eurasian bloc that is far more attractive. It has far more people in any case. You're talking about well over a billion people with the populations of China, Russian, and the other Asian countries.
Right.
It's a far more powerful bloc than the United States. So what are the Latin American economies and societies going to do if they're faced with, do we develop a strong relationship with the most successful, the biggest economic bloc on the planet, or do we string along with what a country of barely 3 million? What's the population of the United States? 300 million?
330, maybe, something like that.
Yeah, something like that, and which is, in comparison with the countries that make up Eurasia, is peanuts.
Right.
So why should Latin America go along with the United States rather than with Eurasia?
Yeah, and you know that's, you're talking in terms of quantitative things, but there's also the qualitative measure, which is, you know, regardless of motive, one might say that it's because of the stage of development of China and its relationship to these countries at the moment. But they're offering win-win, and the United States is offering, give me your stuff or I'll shoot you in the head.
Right,
just,
yeah.
You know, which has been historically the model that the United States has employed in Latin America. So people tend to take them at their word at this point. And so when you have those two things being offered, there's quite a dance for the elites, local elites, in front of the domestic audience, to advocate, let's get shot in the head and let them take our stuff, in front of people who were tired of that and would like a taste, or have had a taste in many cases, of the win-win. And so you've got a competitive advantage in what China offers that the United States apparently can't allow to be made sitting at a table and, you know, up close. And maybe so you start breaking up the mechanisms by which that kind of engagement would happen. If there is no UNASUR, then there is no one representing all of South America sitting down with China to make a deal that might benefit South America.
Yeah, and you're right. And the current phase of the predominance of right-wing governments in the region is definitely a transitionary phase. It's not a stable phase. At the moment, and before Mauricio Macri came to power in 2015, and before the soft coup against Dilma Rousseff in 2016, the community of Latin American and Caribbean states was negotiating very successfully as a bloc with both the European Union and with China.
That's correct.
And it's subsequent to this, the predominance of right wing governments in Argentina and Brazil in particular, that CELAC has kind of been treading water. They haven't been able to develop or make progress in the kinds of relations, nothing like the progress that they were making prior to 2015, 2016.
Well, you know, what's interesting there on that point is that in 2015, when Macri was elected, and he took office in 2016, the CELAC meeting still was extremely successful. And as a matter of fact, Macri announced, and I think he himself went to Beijing, that he was going to sit down with Beijing and cut a bunch of deals, which he did. In other words, the sheer gravity of motion at that moment brought it didn't really leave Macri a choice, and or in any event made a choice attractive for Argentina to continue on that track. When they broke Brazil out of there, also. Now you have a different dynamic in South America when you've got the two largest economies out of that loop, and so there's a different game afoot now, and this is another step in integrating that kind of reactionary resistance. We've got about a minute, so go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think you're right, Don, and that also underscores the importance of the victory of López Obrador in Mexico. I think Mexico is the second biggest economy in, I think it's the second biggest economy in Latin America after Brazil. So the fact that they now have a government that is very resistant to and very sensitive to, in domestic terms, the question of U.S. influence, whereas the previous government did what it almost did whatever the United States wanted. That's no longer the case, and that too is another reason why Prosur is unlikely to prosper, because without Mexico actively promoting it, while Mexico remains in a country that would rather recognize UNASUR than Prosur, and that's it's very difficult to see how Prosur is going to after this initial launch,
right?
I don't think it's got anywhere to go, really.
I say again, my opinion, I think it's actually intended to just thwart action by UNASUR, but we'll see. We got to stop here. Appreciate your time as always, and your insight, and we'll speak again next week.
Yeah, thanks a million, Tom. Look forward to it.
Same.
Bye now.
Bye bye.
And that's all the news we have for you right now for Community Public Radio. I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.